not young kids shouted on that one. So my name's Daniel. I'm one of the community group leaders here at Catalyst. Dave Kibler, our normal pastor and preacher, doesn't believe in setting his hours back an hour, and so he was actually preaching at 8:15 this morning to an empty room. But that's okay, because you got me instead. No, that's a lie. He's actually on a mission trip. Him and a team of gentlemen are heading out on a mission trip this morning. So if you'd be praying for them, they're going to do some exciting work this week down in the Dominican. Is that right, Rachel? Down in the Dominican. So be praying for them. Well, over the past 7 weeks, as John talked about, and as those of you who have been here know, we have been talking about what the discipleship journey with Jesus looks like. We talked about how we can be disciples and how we can disciple others. And so as we sort of concluded that last week, I want to ask this week a simple question. Now what? Now what? You see, it's a very simple question, but it's a question that many people face in various areas of life, isn't it? I mean, we may face it in sort of the deep valleys of life, don't we? I mean, you have a bad day at the office. You come home, the dishwasher's broken. There's a message from your kid's school teacher, which is never good when they call. And then suddenly, all at once, various different family members start calling you, ones you haven't spoken to in years. And before you pick up the phone, you quietly think to yourself, now what? But it's not just in the valleys, it's in the mountaintops as well, right? The Cubs win the World Series. Now what? Hey, haters. You secure a new job or promotion, right? Now what? What's going to happen? You just get married, you just have a baby. Now what? Or if you're like me, you're on a date night at a nice dinner and the waiter or waitress brings dessert. Now what? It's exciting. And while we might ask this question in many different areas, in many different places, and it might sound different for most of us, I would say that it never fails to present itself in similar ways when it comes to our spiritual life. We've just been baptized. Now what? We've spent years studying the Bible. Now what? We've prayed earnestly and faithfully. And sometimes we even don't feel God. Now what? We've spent 7 weeks listening to our pastor convict us to be more and better disciples. Now what? So as we've just finished up this 40-day journey, this question is critically important for us as individuals. Now what in our personal spiritual life? But you see, it's equally important for us as a church. Now what do we do as a community, as a body of believers, with what we've just studied for 40 days? But rest assured, we find ourselves in the same place as many who have gone before us. In fact, we find ourselves in a similar place to that of Jesus' disciples, right around the time when he finally left, when he was taken up to heaven. You see, we find his last instruction to his disciples in Acts 1, after he died and resurrected and was reappeared to them before he finally ascended. And in this type of now what moment, the disciples are sort of eager, and they ask him the question, what's in store next? Are you going to restore the kingdom of Israel? And their question is really this, are you finally going to restore our nation to greatness? Are you going to finally give us a country that has a place of prominence? Will we finally have a nation that the world can look on in awe and fear and respect? Will we be a people again? Ironically, probably the type of question that many are wrestling with in this particular season in our country. But what's interesting is, though they ask this question specifically about earthly things, Jesus directs their focus elsewhere, doesn't he? He says, it's not for you to know. And as if utterly and completely disinterested about their desire for a nation, their desire to be a people, their desire to be a collective. Something that they could call and recognize as their own, he pushes them to think differently. He calls them to be a people without borders. Without borders. He says, "You will be my witnesses to Jerusalem and into all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth." Jerusalem, their capital city. Judea and Samaria, their nearby territory. And to the ends of the earth, here, near, and far. But this mission wasn't a simple one for them, right? I mean, they didn't spend time with Jesus and just kind of go back to their normal lives now that he was gone. It wasn't merely living their normal lives, just sort of trusting God would use them to reach their fishing buddies back at the local village or their office mates. It was a radical mission to go for the sake of the gospel, to be on mission here, near, and far. And more importantly, not or, but here, near, and far. And so they did. They experienced the goodness and life-transforming message of Jesus. They walked with him, they learned from him, they listened to him, and then they went. And the church was built because of it. In fact, it's the very reason why we sit here today, thousands of years later, and thousands of miles away. But you see, it's not an isolated case. I mean, I know that we sort of read through Scripture and we read of the disciples' journey and we go, okay, well, sure, they went on to change the world. Of course they did. I mean, they spent 3 years with Jesus. Give me 1 month with Jesus and I could probably do the same thing. Give Dave Kibler a day and he could probably do twice as good as me, right? But God has done this throughout Scripture and continues to do it throughout the world today. You see, we see that when God meets people, and when they see his glory and are moved to mission, they go. They go. You see, he calls them. He works in their heart. He blesses them and gives them an identity in his family, an identity separate from this world, an identity that's bigger than this earth. Take, for instance, Abraham. In Genesis 12, we find him called by God. Beginning right in verse 1, the Lord says to Abraham, he says, "Go from your country, your people, your father's household, to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on the earth will be blessed through you." So Abram went, as the Lord had told him. And something happens when Abraham encounters God, doesn't it? I mean, he listens, he believes, he's obedient, and he goes. And the church is built because of it, and we sit here today because of it. But consider what this meant for him, right? It says he left his country. He left the people he knew. He left his family and likely his inheritance, his financial security, his way of making money. Everything he knew, he left and he went. This would sort of be akin to you sort of absorbing this message today, which is hopefully really great and speaks to your heart and you just, you know, go out into the world. But it would be akin to you going home and praying today, hearing God's call, and then packing up and moving to a foreign country with no plan, no security, no real destination in mind, but with faith that God would reveal everything in proper time, that he would show you where and how and what you were supposed to do there, but only when you began to go. I mean, imagine that. Imagine God calls you to leave your extended family, your job, your neighborhood, your livelihood behind. Imagine that he says to just trust him to show you the way, to just, you know, kind of show up at the airport, and you'll know, bags packed, ready to go, house sold, Well, guys, good luck having that conversation with your wife tonight. Hey, babe, bags are packed. Don't know where we're going. If yours is like mine, there's going to be some funny looks. But something happens when we experience God, doesn't it? He invites us in and he tells us to go. Go and do likewise. Go and build the church. Go and bless others. It's a reoccurring theme all throughout Scripture. You can't go very many books of the Bible before you hear God say go. Because as he has done for us, he expects us to do for others in our lives. Bless others as we've been blessed. Give to others as we've been gift. Gift to others as we've been gifted. Share as we've been shared with. And so you see, as we studied the four chairs of discipleship over the past 7 weeks, I want you to notice something. There was only one chair that called for us to be invited in, wasn't there? Remember the first chair that Dave had up here was come and see. Come, be introduced to Jesus. Come, get to know him. Come and explore what it's all about. Come. However, once we give our lives with Jesus, once we sort of make that leap into faith and discipleship and start living for him rather than for ourselves, it's kind of different, isn't it? I mean, the next three chairs are all about going, doing, being active. It's follow me, become fishers of men, go and bear fruit. And so if you have come and seen who Jesus is and have given your life over to him, he is now calling you to go and do likewise. Go and bless others. And as we read the scriptures, we find that the cost to go, to be on mission, is often greater than we can ever imagine, isn't it? I mean, we read of people that left livelihoods behind, disciples that gave their life, prophets that preached to people who never listened, and we sort of go, wow, that's tough. But you see, it's worth it. It's worth it. Because God calls us into mission, not because it sort of builds up our earthly life, but because it refines and builds our faith in him. It's kind of where we experience him, in mission with him. You see, when we join him on the mission, it hones and sharpens who we are spiritually. It's the mission that makes us effective. A knife in the knife block never gets sharper, does it? You got to pull it out. It requires us to ask the tough questions of ourselves, to examine our hearts and our motives, to decide what's really important to us. Consider this. Consider what Jesus tells us as he himself is on mission, as he journeys towards the cross. In John 12, he points out the fact that he too must go. It's not just us. He must die and be resurrected by the Father to fulfill the gospel story. Picking up in John 12, 23, he says this. He says, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me." You see, he looked at his mission to go to the cross and saw no option otherwise, did he? To not go would be to hang on to life here on earth, and that would have dire, terrible consequences, not just for him, but for all of humanity. And yet the same is true for us. You see, Jesus tells us here that we must not hang on too closely to the things of this world, to our life, our possessions, our status, our livelihoods. He compares it, get this imagery, he compares it to a seed that hangs on to a plant for fear of dying. And so never fulfills its duty to reproduce, and yet dies anyway. You see, it's not until that seed is willing to break free and dive into the soil that it can reproduce and multiply, be useful, and fulfill its true mission in life. Do you see the implications of what Jesus is saying here? He is looking at his disciples who will one day become the foundation of the church. He knows that they face a life of hard work and sacrifice and persecution, even death. But he says those things, that adversity will come either way. And that's kind of life, right? I mean, those of us who've lived any life know that stuff happens. Stuff happens when you're on mission. Stuff happens when you're sitting at home on the couch. In the end, we all lose the world. The only difference is that for some, that's all they ever had. That's it. For others, they were willing to lose that for the sake of something far greater. I think this is why Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in his book, Life Together, pushes us to consider our roles as Christians in this life. And he says, the Christian cannot simply take for granted the privilege of living among other Christians. Jesus Christ lived in the midst of his enemies. In the end, all his disciples abandoned him. On the cross, he was all alone, surrounded by criminals and the jeering crowds. He had come for the express purpose of bringing peace to the enemies of God. And so Christians, too, belong not in the seclusion of a cloistered life, but in the midst of enemies. It's there that they find their mission and their work. And you see, I think that's inspiring because these words come not from a man who preached in the comfort of a church until peacefully passing of old age at like 85 or 90, right? I mean, for those who don't know, Bonhoeffer, though German, actively participated in the Nazi resistance until eventually he was imprisoned for over a year before being moved to a Nazi concentration camp, where he spent another about half year to a year, throughout all of which he continued to pastor and preach to fellow inmates and guards, until he was then finally executed at the age of 39. And just 2 weeks before Allied troops liberated the camp that he was in. You see, Bonhoeffer understood that to know Jesus was to go in his name, was to do in his name. It was to loosen our grip on this life, and it was to multiply the gospel throughout it. Because you see, it's in finding our mission, it's in joining Christ on mission that we are forced to find deep trust and deep faith with God. Because when he calls us to go, it's often clear that the task is way beyond our own abilities, isn't it? I mean, anytime you've done something for God, you look at it and you go, ah, how? And yet he works in us through his Spirit and gives us everything we need. You see, the seed itself cannot will itself to multiply, can it? I mean, as it falls to the ground, it can only go and trust that the gardener will give it everything it needs to thrive and to reproduce and to multiply. But first, the seed must go. And so let me ask you this question. When was the last time that you experienced a real dependence on God? When was the last time that you had to step out and truly walk in faith? When was the last time you saw God move in your life? If it's been some time, it's often because the comfort and contentment of our lives can keep us from the call to go. I struggle with that a lot sometimes. Sometimes the couch is more comfortable than getting in the game. Sometimes rooting on your favorite team is more fun than playing the sports, and yet it's sometimes so much less fulfilling. And yet many of those we read about in the scriptures encounter God in big ways in their life, don't they? But have you noticed that it's typically only when they're actually going for God? When they're going, when they're on mission. I mean, Abraham, Moses, Isaiah, David, the disciples, Paul, they all moved from come and see to follow me, and then they would go. And it's in going that they truly met God, that they truly met Jesus. It's in going that their faith was honed and perfected. It's in going that their mission was multiplied throughout the earth. It's in going where they were able to experience the full power and glory of God. It's in going. So, I mean, how can you go? How can you join in the mission that God has called us to? How can we at Catalyst be a people who are not content with comfortable life, but determined to multiply as those who came before us did? How do we go? Well, if you'll remember, if you were here back in January, Dave shared sort of a renewed vision for Catalyst. We had grown, we had gone through growing pains, we kind of got into sort of pre-adolescence as a church, and we sort of renewed our focus on life as a church. And it was a vision that the elders and staff had been praying on and developing for about a year at that time. And it was that Catalyst would be about planting reproducing gospel communities here, near, and far. If it sounds like we stole it from Acts 1, it's because we did. It's God's mission. That we would be a people that followed the same vision that Jesus gave to his disciples right before he left. Now, if you're still in chair one, if you've been with us through the four chairs of discipleship and you spent those 40 days with us and you go, you know what, I'm still in chair one. I'm still coming to see what Jesus is all about, what following him means, what Catalyst is all about as a church, that is fantastic. We want you to continue to explore that. And we would love to join you on that journey, to answer the questions that you have, to walk with you as you explore faith and as you explore making this church your church home. All I ask is that if you want us to help you or join you in on that journey, let our staff know. Let a community group leader know. Let one of our leaders or elders know. Our staff's emails are on the newsletter that you got when you came in. You can email any of them with questions or to join a community group, or to find out more about what this all means. But if you've made a commitment to follow Jesus, if you're in chair 2, 3, or 4, if you consider Catalyst your church home, then we're asking you to personally own this mission, to plant reproducing gospel communities here, near, and far. You see, you've heard the gospel message, you've committed your life to it, you've joined this community of believers at Catalyst, you call this your home, and now it's time to go. But maybe not literally. If Dave comes back next week and nobody's here, that's going to be awkward. But you're called to go. Because God's not called us to be comfortable in our faith, to simply be a seed that never falls to the ground and reproduce, to be people that avoid the hard work and adversity that comes with the mission he's called us to. Like Abraham and the disciples, like Bonhoeffer, he says, you have seen me. You've seen me, and you know me. Now go. So over the next year to 2 years, John alluded to some of this, but the staff and leadership are working on providing more opportunities for you to answer this call. They're feverishly meeting and working and trying to figure out what's next. How can we get people engaged in this mission that we said that Catalyst is all about? And so the first area is here in our local community. It's here that we're continuing to plant new community groups every year. Groups that will study and pray together, do life together, and consider how they can reach their own local community and neighborhoods with the gospel message. If you're not currently part of a group, you should really consider joining one. Our staff is working exceptionally hard that even though we see continual new people to the church, that there is a place for everybody in a group. But it's also important because these groups are going to be the primary way that we work together at here at Catalyst as smaller groups to reach our local neighborhoods. And within each group, there's going to be opportunities to be involved in ministries in all three areas of here near far. As each group considers how God has uniquely gifted them as a group, what are the skills and passions and abilities of that group to really reach the world with the gospel? And it's exciting. We're really calling the groups to be more than just a Bible study, more than just a fellowship, but to be on mission together with Jesus. Well, when it comes to near, you heard John say that the 2017 is going to be sort of a focus time on near. We're going to be ramping up in two key areas. The first, domestic missions. Sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? But there's going to be opportunities over the next year for you and even your entire community group, if you'd like, to be a part of a mission trip here in our own country. Because it's not just other countries that we are called to spread the gospel to, is it? It's right here at home. The other thing is that Catalyst will begin next year working towards, not necessarily doing, but working towards its first church plant. And this is huge because we don't want to be a church that simply grows up and never sends seeds out into the world, right? We don't want to be this massive plant where seeds just hang on and we go, we don't want to leave. But we want to send seeds out and multiply. And so the staff and the leaders are beginning to explore what that looks like. They're having the initial conversations over the past couple months. And they're beginning to see what that looks like. And now's the time that if that's something that works in your heart and you're interested and you want to pray with them and you want to, you know, be actively a part of that to let them know. Regardless, it's going to require quite a few of us in this church to be praying over how we can help the staff and leaders support that, because it's our mission, not their mission. From giving financially to giving of our time or our talents or our giftedness. And to some of you in this room, maybe eventually giving through a commitment to go and be a part of something brand new and exciting. And your next, now what? And finally, we are continuing in our efforts to support FAR through global missions and global church planning. We continue to support missionaries around the world. If you've never been to our missionary board, back in the back, your right, my left, go there after service and see some of the amazing missions that we support as a church, that your tithes and offerings go to help. We've been fortunate to have numerous missionaries sent from this church, both short and long term, and we continue to hope and pray that more of us in this church will be called to answer the call, will be called and answer the call to global missions. We'll also be exploring opportunities for community groups in the future to have a more active role with some of our global missionaries and church plants, for you to have an interaction and a relationship with them and encourage them and love on them and support them as a community group. And so we'll be working with community group leaders over the next year to explore that more and move forward and implement it as different groups desire that. And as different groups do that, we can together have a real impact on FAR. So what can you do? How can you be a part of the vision that God has put on the hearts of the and mind of the staff and the leadership here at Catalyst? Well, pray fervently, pray hard. I know that's what our family's doing. Pray that God reveals to you how you can go in your name, in His name, how you can use your gifts and abilities. And then this is important, be willing to go. Be willing to go when He calls you. Be willing to share your gifts, your resources, your time, your faith. God may call you in very different ways to go here, near, and far, but He has called all of us to go. And we desire as a church of people to be a church of people that are going in His name. So please take this seriously. Consider how you and your family can be on mission for the gospel. John Kelly did the communion and offering. He's our worship and executive pastor and basically everything that nobody else wants to do. His email's in that flyer that you got. But do me a favor. If you want to join a community group, email him. If you are interested in planting a new community group, whether as a leader or as a host home, we need both, let him know. If you're interested in praying with us about being involved in a church plant in the future, in any way, whether it's just as a prayer partner, let him know. If you're even remotely interested in going on a global mission, whether it's for a week or forever, we'll get rid of you. Let him know. Talk to him. You can talk to me after service as well, but I don't really have a lot of authority here. You see, we're committed to get you involved in this vision, and I'm brutally committed to filling John's email box on Monday morning with messages from people who are inspired to go. And so please be praying as a family and as a community group, and let us and our staff and our eldership and our leaders here know what we can do to help you take the next step on the mission that God has called you to in your discipleship journey. And so as the band comes back up, I just want to conclude lastly in John 17. You see, I think one of the reasons that a lot of us get hesitant to go is that we're sort of in that valley of life. We're sort of in that valley of joy with God, right? I mean, we just don't quite feel him. But you see, as Jesus prepares to be crucified and to depart from this world, he prays to God. And he says in verse 18, John 17, he says, "You sent me into the world, and so I have sent them into the world." See, Jesus is sending us into the world just as he was sent, to serve, to disciple, to be on mission, to die to this world. But you see, before that, in verse 13, he says this, "These things I speak into the world that they may have my joy fulfilled in them." You see, if you're in that valley, if you're in that place, know this. We find our true joy, the joy that comes from Jesus, not from this world, when we go, when we are on mission with him, when we are planting here, near, and far. We are blessed, we are given, we are gifted, not for our own comfort, but to be a blessing to this world. But to do that, we must go. And so I'll pray, and then we're going to celebrate.